Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we have a conversation about everybody's favorite subject, that is food. Well, actually, we like to talk about taste here at Taste Matters, partly because that's the name of our show, but also because I think that people don't always have an opportunity to talk about taste. Sometimes that's left out of conversations about food. But that will not be the case today, as we are in the midst of barbecue season, and every barbecue seems to be on the mind of everyone in New York City, because you can't really, you know, swing a pork shoulder without hitting a barbecue place, either in the East Village or in Midtown or in Brooklyn, where we are right now. We thought it would be a wonderful opportunity to talk to two of the people who are responsible, perhaps, or certainly who have a hand in making barbecue the iconic American food that it is. I am sitting here, I'm so excited to be able to say this, I'm sitting here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, with the legendary Mike Mills and Amy Mills Tunnicliffe from 17th Street Barbecue in Murfreesboro, Illinois. Thank you for coming.
It's a pleasure to be here.
The pleasure is ours. It's very. I kind of want to go out into Roberta's and tell everybody who's here, because I don't think they know. They can see. They can peer in. I know that would be embarrassing for you, but it would be very exciting and gratifying for us. So let's start and tell people what 17th Street Barbecue is first, because not everyone will have been there. They're looking at each other to see. Mike, come on.
No.
Yeah, come on.
Amy can probably explain that a little bit better than I can.
Well, 17th Street Barbecue is our family restaurant. We have been in business for 27 years in Southern Illinois. We have a couple of other locations in Southern Illinois and Las Vegas, but the mothership is in Murfreesboro, where you had we had the pleasure of hosting you last January. And it's, you know, it's really amazing that we are able to attract people from all over the world to this little tiny burb of in the middle of nowhere.
Because it is not near Chicago, which we learned. It's
no,
a long
it is
way
not.
From there.
7 hours.
Yeah. Okay. So don't mistake. Don't think you're going for lunch if you're in Chicago.
Exactly.
And okay. So what is a barbecue restaurant? Let's talk about that. Like what? I mean. You know, we're sitting here in Roberta's, which could be, in some ways, feels a little bit like it could be a barbecue restaurant.
It does.
In many ways, but it's not. But what does that mean? Talk to me a little bit about what a barbecue place is.
Well, a barbecue place is obviously a place that serves barbecue.
Duh. Okay,
and,
that's good.
But, you know, to us, it goes so much deeper than that, because really, what we found in any given place, a barbecue restaurant really sort of becomes the town hall for a community. It's a place where people gather. It's a place where families come and make memories, and children grow up in our restaurant, and they move away, and they come back, and they bring their children, or
Amazing.
They have their family reunion. You know, the Rotary Club and the Shriners meet there every week. It's sort of it's the town hall. It's the place where people go to see and be seen, and become accepted and sort of be part of something a little bit larger.
Maybe like the real American bistro would be in France or a trattoria in Italy. It's where life happens, in a barbecue place, especially
that,
in a small town.
That is a perfect analogy.
Okay. And barbecue, we got to get that out there. And that's a question for Mike. Like when we say barbecue, of course, many of the people I grew up with in the Northeast here think you light some briquettes and you grill a piece of fish or you grill some steaks, but that's not what we're talking about exactly. What are we talking about?
Well, you know, and I don't want to discredit that part of it and say that's not barbecuing, because in this day and age, that's actually grilling, but at the same time, it's referred to as barbecue.
Right, because you do it on a thing they call a barbecue on the box, right?
Exactly. Technically, barbecue is a low and slow method. It takes hours upon hours, depending on what you're cooking. If you're cooking a whole hog, for example, you're talking about, you know, 18 to 20 to 22 hours.
Well,
you know,
so that's not fast food.
Ribs is takes us. I'm going to tell you 6 to 6.5 hours. Very low heat, long period of time. That brings in the smoke and the flavors of all of the meat and the rubs that are put on the sauce that is applied, and it all just marries together and gives you a very welcome taste and something that everyone can enjoy.
For some reason, as you're talking, I'm salivating. I don't know why. There's something about just hearing the time and the taste and your accent and the whole thing. It's so cool. Okay, so is there something about that time, do you think, Amy, back to the culture of barbecue and the role these places play, that passage of time that might make these places that become natural meeting things? I mean, not a lot of, you know, right now we're in the a la minute moment of cuisine, let's say, where you know, a limited handling, quick on the pan, fresh as could be. And here we're talking something a little, I'll say, lazier, although I know it's not lazy because there's a lot happening in those 6 or 12 or 24 hours. But is there some difference of time in a barbecue place, the concept of time?
I think the concept of time makes people slow down.
Mm-hmm.
It's not food that you can do in a hurry. When we're sold out of something, we can't whip up another hamburger.
What?
when we're out, we're out. But there's something about slowing down and taking the time and learning to, you know, savor life and be with each other and hanging out around a fire, even though people are not necessarily hanging around a pit in our barbecue restaurant. There is that concept, you know, that familial community concept that is going on with barbecue. Mm-hmm. I think we automatically associate barbecue, to me, is the original slow food movement. They just didn't know how to organize.
Or maybe they organized better, since barbecue is going very strong and slow food has its ups and downs.
Exactly.
You know? So, and the reality is actually that all the time is taken before someone actually arrives in a restaurant. So it is fast once you're there. You guys have spent all that time tending the smoke and the smokers, I should say, and that kind of stuff. Let's talk about the flavor and the taste. Many people may know, or maybe not, that there are regional differences. At least we've cut the country up into barbecue styles. Can we talk a little bit about what those styles are, and also then where 17th Street Barbecue fits in?
Sure. Well, there are really four different strong regional types of barbecue. When you look at the history books, you have the Carolinas, which is traditionally whole hog, with all chopped up, all the great parts of the hog chopped mm-hmm. up into one big thing. Usually seasoned with vinegar sauce in the Eastern Carolina region. And in Western Carolina, it's really all about pork shoulders, again, with that vinegar sauce, mm-hmm. but served either chopped, cubed, or sliced. In Kansas City, where you really had the stockyard movement going, mm-hmm. you know, a large beef contingency there and also some pork, heavy there on the oak and hickory flavorings. You know, wood okay. plays a huge role in how barbecue ends up tasting.
Sweeter sauce or no in Kansas City?
You always hear yeah. about that sweet, sweet sauce, and some of it is. I think Kansas City sauce really is a real melting pot. Uh-huh. If you think about Gates or Arthur Bryant's, which are the two most legendary places in Kansas City, neither of their sauces are particularly sweet.
No, not
so
at
I think
all.
That's
spicy
kind of yeah.
Tangy,
I think that's a yeah. misnomer, okay. that whole sweet thing. As far as the Kansas City proper.
Uh-huh.
Then you have Texas,
right.
Again, where beef is king.
not
always a lot of sauce. You know, Texas likes to think that we are all just a suburb of Texas. I've seen the gauntlet throw down that, you know, that is the best barbecue, and we can all just smile while we're munching.
Well, they've got those big hats.
So exactly.
Right.
While we're all munching on our pork, that's fine, and it's all good. I just actually got back from a trip to Austin, and I had some really great barbecue. But, again, you hear no sauce, but a lot of the newer places do have sauce. Mm-hmm. So they're starting to become this sort of hybridization of barbecue, and I hope that doesn't happen too much, because I think the regionality,
right.
the regional differences are important. And then you have Memphis, and that's really what we associate
okay.
most with. We are 3 hours north of Memphis. And Memphis is all about dry-rubbed ribs, definitely some sauce, some tomato-based sauce, and we think that tastes really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, we are absolutely equal opportunity barbecue people.
Say,
we love it all.
You also do other barbecue.
We do.
Right,
we do brisket. You know, we're famous for those ribs because of Mike and the Apple City Barbecue team and all the awards they won for their baby back ribs. And so that's what people come for.
Right.
to 17th Street, but they're often surprised, pleasantly surprised, that we have a lot of other really good things, too. We really have a nod to all kinds of barbecue on our menu.
Just last night at the James Beard House, two regular members were telling me they had major beans, your famous beans, this weekend for dinner, and that nothing satisfies like 17th Street barbecue beans.
Those are pretty good. People like those beans a lot. They have five different types of beans in them, right. And they have a lot of sugar. They're not for the faint of heart, and they have usually some, we throw some rib bones in there or some pulled pork instead of bacon, and they are a wow.
Mike, so tell me, in your approach to the flavor, when you are satisfied with the meat coming off of your smoker in your restaurant, what are you looking for? What is good for you?
Well, you know, what I try to achieve and have always wanted, what I refer to as a perfect barbecue, is whenever you can close your eyes and you can tell what you're eating. You can tell if it's pork, you can tell if it's chicken, you can tell if it's beef. You know, that flavor is not disguised. I want you to be able to taste a little bit of the dry rub, which is a combination of spices. Basically, all dry rubs are the same. It's just the number of spices and the quantities of each item as to how the flavor is. At the same time, you know, whenever you're putting on a sauce, you don't want that to overpower the flavor of the meat and or the spice. It should complement it. And then the real secret on part of it is the smoke. That should not taste like you're eating a piece of charcoal.
Okay.
When you get all these flavors to combine and melt together, you know, then you've got a little dance going on in your mouth, kind of referred to. You got a rodeo going on. But each one being in balance, that is the real secret
balance of
barbecue, is the balance.
What strikes me is that you've just described the same way you could describe a Michelin 3-star meal, balance, that everything is sort of true to itself, that nothing is attacks your tongue or nothing is out of place in some way, and perhaps that's part of the enduring why barbecue endures so much, that we're all looking for that same sense of balance and harmony.
Well, and that's very true about any food as far as that balance goes. You know, I always when I'm tasting food, I get to thinking, what is that? I taste something. It's right on the tip of my tongue, but it's the mystique about what is that, you know? And that's what happens when you blend a dry rub and you blend a combination of seasonings together to get that balance to where I know what that is, and it just kind of drives you crazy until you figure out what is that that in there that makes that kind of just a little bit different.
And you're famous for a rub. A magic rub.
We call it magic dust.
And can you tell us what's in that a little bit? Just,
well, you know, you have the normal carrier is paprika. And you know, we have some chili powder in it. We have a little dried mustard in it. Of course, we have there's three kinds of pepper. We have, you know, the regular red pepper, little black pepper, and also a little white pepper. But that sounds like, well, that's a lot of pepper. But if you blend them well, these each one attacked you in your taste buds in a different spot. You know, the red pepper being back down in the throat a little bit. The black pepper is kind of in the jaw, and the white pepper is going to be in the front part of the mouth. So you have a tingling going on, but nothing that's going to burn you up. Hot and spicy, it's very difficult to find a word other than hot and spicy to describe something sometime. I know that when we were looking for this and wanting to name our spicy sauce, is what we've referred to it for a long time, and it wasn't a burn you up like a hot sauce would be. What it was, it had a little kick. And we were sitting around, you know, talking about what can we call this, and said something, well, you know, it's got a little kick. That's it. So that's what we named the sauce. I refer to as our spicier sauce. It has a little kick because it's not a burn you up.
Right.
I can eat as hot a food as anybody in the nation can eat, but that's not a pleasure.
Right.
Food has to have flavor. It's all about flavor.
That's why we're here. It's all
when
about
it just
flavor.
Burns your mouth up, there is no flavor.
No, that's pain. That's
different.
Pain.
Right. Yes.
So before we take a quick break, I want to remind people listening that you, if you have any questions or you have any comments, that you can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org or you can tweet us at TasteMattersHRN. We'll be right back. We're talking with Mike Mills and Amy Mills, and we are talking about everyone's favorite subject, barbecue. You're listening to Taste Matters.
You're listening to Lung by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Keep it locked for more Taste Matters.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and today we're talking barbecue with Amy and Mike Mills from 17th Street Barbecue in Murfreesboro, Illinois. One of the ways that, well, there are several ways that you guys became the legends that you are. First and foremost, I consistently made some of the most delicious ribs and pork and brisket and whatever anyone ever had. But then you guys have also been sort of ambassadors for barbecue through the books that you've done. Well, the book you've done, Peace, Love, and Barbecue, one of the greatest titles of any book ever, actually, and something that you see even on things unrelated to the book because it's so compelling. Amy and I met on a TV show where we were judging barbecue best in smoke, and where I learned that there's a whole other world of barbecue that isn't about eating in restaurants, but about competing, and we'll talk about that. And then there is the fact that you guys helped found this thing here in New York that has created the current craze of barbecue. We're in the Big Apple Barbecue. Can you talk a little bit about the Big Apple Barbecue and your impressions of taking this small town hall idea to the big city, to Madison Square Park?
Well, the founding of the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party, I think, has been tremendous for New York because it's given people an opportunity to eat some of the best barbecue in the country all on one weekend. You would have to travel, I think we figured up one time, over 15,000 miles to go to all of those barbecue restaurants and try that barbecue. And it's all right
now
here.
You just have to wait for 15,000 hours. Might
be just a little bit of a line. Right. But people are very patient, and I'm going to let my dad tell a funny story about that in just a moment. But I do think it's created a community here, and it's interesting because, you know, people we met in the first year were dating, and then they got married, and now they're coming back and bringing their children.
Okay, that's amazing.
It gives me goosebumps when I think about it. So we have seen life cycles happening, and, you know, since we have just celebrated the 11th year, you know, you just see that. And because we're from all over the country, it really is a celebration of the best regional American barbecue. So there's something for everyone. So we have people from Memphis, Southern Illinois, St. Louis, even Chicago.
Right.
Since we're from Illinois, they sort of are, those expats are coming to us.
Right.
And the Texas people are running to Salt Lick and wanting to be there. So everybody sort of has their little pocket of admirers, but then they're also exposed to something new and different, and they meet new friends as well.
And why do you come, Mike? Like, why do you pack up? Why does everyone come here? I mean, you know, what do you care what the city slickers think about barbecue?
Well, you know, it all started out originally as a idea by Kenny Callahan and Danny Meyer of Blue Smoke.
Uh-huh.
And I happened to be here. I was fortunate enough to be able to help them put that restaurant in. And whenever they ran this idea out there, I thought it was great because we do similar things back home, but not on the scale that it could be done in barbecue, you know, here in New York City. And one of the big questions has always been, back several years ago, can you have barbecue, real barbecue in New York City? And, of course, whenever I first somebody asked me that, I said, well, why not?
You can burn things, right?
You know, it can happen here. It's just a matter of having the people that have the heart and the desire and the want to produce barbecue the way it is. And they wanted to kind of show, you know, the people here that it was real barbecue and expose the people. You know, not everybody was born here in New York. This is a melting pot from all over the world, so to speak.
Right.
And it's just been a development, and you just know how many barbecue places there are now.
It's incredible. I mean, literally 5 or 6 open this year, and it has to be because of the community that you guys have helped engender here, I think.
Well, you know, and I'm very proud to have been involved in all of this. You know, at the same time, we all get the feeling, and all the pit masters that come here, I know that I have this feeling, and I talk to them, and they get it too. The way they're treated by the people of New York and the desire and the want. And a lot of them are reaching back home, as Amy was talking about, little pockets here and there. They're reaching back because they haven't been back to Texas or they haven't been back to Illinois or Mississippi, Tennessee, wherever they may happen to be from. And something that I've really noticed, and I got to tell this story right quick. You know how the hustle and the bustle of New York City is, and of course, I'm from small town USA, you know, 7,000 people. And I noticed that everybody passed everybody by. They didn't stop on the street and speak or do anything else. Whenever this barbecue thing started, the Big Apple Block Party, I noticed that the people slowed down a little bit. And they would stand in line and not shoving, pushing, actually talking to each other. Mm-hmm. I didn't see this up and down the street. And then I, after a couple of years, I really got to thinking, there's something to this. And I used to have several colonies of bees, honeybees. And I figured out that, well, I didn't figure it out, but if you, in order to work with the bees, because they're hustling, bustling, they got a job to do. They're out to make honey, you know, they're getting ready for wintertime. But if you smoke them, they become docile. And you can work with them. So anytime you're working and, you know, getting the honey from them and anything else, you have to, you smoke them.
Right, okay.
And that makes them docile where you can go in and work and they won't just attack you.
Okay.
I've related this to the people.
of New York City.
If you will watch this crowd as they come and as they leave, they're just, you know, the whole pace of life changes. Their attitudes change. They're talking to each other. They're meeting new people. What a world.
Wow.
I mean, yes, it's a wow. And I've sat and watched this year after year. And we also have made friends here.
Sure.
People, and we look forward to seeing them. Wonder if so-and-so will be there. You know, wonder if Bill will be there. You know, different ones. And, you know, each year. And then we meet new people each year. Mm-hmm. And this is the same way for the rest of Pit Masters.
Of course.
There's probably about 40 pit masters around the country that would like to be involved in this. And unless it's for health reasons or something along that, nobody's given up a spot.
Right.
They want to come
How
back.
How many spots are there?
There are 17. This year they're having 18.
Oh, well.
They increased the number to 18 this year. Normally it's been 15.
Well. We just need a bigger city somehow to accommodate them.
And every square inch is spoken for.
Yeah, no joke. So you guys, another thing that you do, I think, to help sort of grow the community, which has to be unique, is what you alluded to earlier. I was in Murfreesboro in January for the barbecue MBA, but it's part of an ongoing series of educational things you do for enthusiasts and for barbecue industry, people interested in getting into the business and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about why you did that? I mean, it seems it's a wonderful thing. It also seems a very generous thing since you guys know so much and you might think you'd want to be proprietary or I don't know.
I think that's something that's very unique to the barbecue world is that we will tell anybody anything we do and everything we do. Mm. And the beauty of barbecue is that people go away and put their own spin on it. there isn't anyone who is doing exactly
right
what we're doing. You know, we've given people, they use our rub, they use our sauce, they use our pits, but yet it tastes
nothing
different.
Totally different. Right.
And you would compare them side by side and it doesn't quite taste the same. There's so many variables mm-hmm. out there. But because of the book and because of some various, you know, media and television shows we've been fortunate to be part of, people really do come from all over the world. And any given day, easily over half our business is from out of town in Southern Illinois. The closest airport is 2 hours away. I mean, we are really nowhere, as you know. But people, they want to sit at the feet of the master and learn. And mm-hmm. and my dad will talk to anybody all day long about anything. And sometimes I just need him to get some work done. Exactly. Like, let's move this on.
But you also bring bring your own bevy of pitmasters to there.
Exactly. So what I ended up doing is saying, clearly there's this need. These people want an audience. So let's have some classes. Mm-hmm. So 3 times a year, we have events. I formed this company called On Cue, and we do consulting for people at their own restaurants, mm-hmm. as well as bring them in for these classes. But we have had, I was counting this up the other day, we've had 15 classes. We've had people from 13 countries and 40 states who have traveled in small groups to come and learn about barbecue. We have catering master classes. We have the business of barbecue. And then we have this January event of which you were a part called the Whole Hog Extravaganza Brisket Bonanza Barbecue MBA. And to me, we're always learning. And I brought in people I wanted to learn from. Right. So I'm very fortunate to have some great barbecue friends. And I called them all up and said, what would you think if we put on this event? And every single one said, tell me what time to be there.
Right.
So, you know, and each year that has sort of grown and changed as people want to keep coming back, so I have to change the programming a little bit.
That's the problem when you do something that's really good.
Exactly. Right. Just wait till you see what we're going to do this January. It's going to be good. So, that event and that opportunity for people to learn and grow is really neat. And, you know, one of my prouder moments when I sent out my first Whole Hog newsletter was John Stage from Dinosaur Barbecue, you know, called me within 5 minutes of that hitting his inbox. And he said, I want to come to that. He said, I've never cooked a whole hog.
Oh, wow.
And so here's a man who's been in business 25 years, and he wanted to come and learn.
Right.
So I said, well, you know, of course you can come, and if you'll be, you know, will you be part of the lineup too? And so he came and spoke about branding and marketing in his business, but he was really there. And now he has cooked dozens of whole hogs and added that. So we all learn from each other too, and I think that is really important.
Okay, so we only have a few minutes left, and it is holiday time. So what's some advice for the amateur? I mean, we didn't even get into the whole competition thing. You'll have to come back, and we'll have another conversation about that. But for the amateur cooking ribs or roasting or smoking a pork shoulder or brisket or something, how can someone improve what they're doing, Mike?
90% of the time, 99% mm-hmm. of the time, if you would just slow the heat down, mm-hmm. and take just a little bit longer, because it doesn't take that 6 hours to do those ribs on a grill.
Right, it could take 20 minutes, right?
Or a Weber kettle or that type, you know, gas grill, whatever it may happen to be. Just slow it down and don't keep flipping the meat over. The more times you turn it, the more it will dry out.
Okay.
And that will help with the moisture problem.
And is there a key temperature that we're looking at for inside that
smoker? I'm going to tell you, yes, most people are cooking about 275 to 300.
Uh-huh.
If you can get it down to 250, 225 would even be better.
Right.
My magic number is 210, okay. Never over 225.
Right.
But I've learned how to, with my equipment, I know how to control it.
Right.
But if you slow that heat down and quit flipping the meat over... And the other thing
I just heard you smack a bunch of people somehow when you said that.
Since there's a small area to surface to cook on, you don't have to cook that rack of ribs in one whole piece. It will give you more room if you will cut that in about 3 or 4 bones. Mm. You can move the small piece. It doesn't hurt to move it. Just don't flip it over. Try to cook it bone down. But it gives you a lot more surface to cover. And you can move it away from the heat, kind of having your heat over to one side As an indirect.
Okay, there's three great pieces of advice already. I think dinner's better on the 4th than it was just a few moments ago. So if people want to find out more, they want to order the book, they want to order the magic dust, go sign up for school, what do they do?
They go to shop.17thstreetbarbecue.com or our main site, which is eat17bbq.com.
Okay. And what's your Twitter handle? We got a lot of Twitter followers.
I know. Please tweet us. We always tweet back. Yeah. At 17th Street BBQ.
Okay.
You can find us on Twitter.
Well, there you have it. I somehow feel like I could talk for hours, and I'm fortunate to be able to talk to you a little bit more, but our half hour is up. Thank you both for coming here. I can't tell everyone listening how much it would be worth your while to fly to St. Louis and drive those 2 hours to go to 17th Street Barbecue, not just because you're going to have a great meal, but because you're going to be part of the family, and it really has that sense. And so we're so fortunate to welcome you into our neck of the woods here at Heritage Radio. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. We treasure your friendship, Mitchell, and thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. It's really good. And we are going to continue the conversation next Wednesday, as every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, where we'll talk about taste. Join us then. You're listening to Taste Matters. Bye. In the meantime, eat something cooked low and slow. Let's say that.
Yes. I don't know. Yes.
And lower and slower, even.
Yeah. Right. Even lower.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.